Okay, good afternoon or good morning or good evening from wherever you're listening from. Welcome and thank you for listening to this episode of Perspectives on Leadership, the Perspectives on Leadership podcast brought to you by Fire Engineering. My name is Steve Shaw and I'm your host. If this is your first time listening, a little bit about me. I'm an assistant chief with Fort Lauderdale Fire Rescue. I've been a part of the Fire Engineering family as an author for several articles, presenter at FDIC, and as a contributor to the Hump Day Hangouts. I consider myself a student of leadership these days, and this podcast is one of those ways in which to dive further into this space. If you've ever met me, you've known that one of my favorite things to speak about is perspective. I'm fascinated by it. I'm intrigued by how we see things differently from so many angles and how that viewpoint or mindset can take away or add to our ability to lead. The goals of this podcast, as it was last time, and as we'll be going forward, are straightforward. We're going to take a concept or a trait that we associate with leadership and take a deep dive down that rabbit hole. Our fire service is filled with amazing leaders, and each have their own perspective on leadership. I want to be able to pick their brains and allow them to provide as many tactical, immediately deployable takeaways as possible to the listener. I want to thank Fire Engineering and, of course, thank you to Chief Bobby Halton for allowing me to have this platform so that I can do my part in passing it on to my brothers and sisters in the fire service. So today the topic is training, not the tactics, not the content, but the perspective on what training means at a higher level. I often use the word transcendence when discussing training, that transcendence you can get beyond the content and such. I believe there is a convergence between leadership, influence, and training. In my most humble opinion, training is the way, it's the path, it's the angle. It is a conduit to understanding our members. It is the ultimate platform to connect with our own. In short, the opportunity to train, educate, instruct, or otherwise pass on knowledge to our firefighters is nothing short of a gift. So what is it to train our own? So in thinking about who we were going to bring in for the guest today, one of the people that I've known for some time now is Deputy Chief Aaron Heller. And I'm very excited to bring him on today. A few things about Aaron before I allow him the floor. A little bit of introduction for Chief Heller. Aaron Heller began his fire service career in 1984. He's a deputy chief in the Hamilton, New Jersey Fire Department, assigned to oversee the training division. He previously served as a fire chief for the Hamilton Township Fire District Number 9. Chief Heller is a New Jersey Level 2 instructor, a fire official, and an EMT. He is a past chief of the New Egypt Volunteer Fire Company and the past chairman of the Plumstead Township Board of Fire Commissioners. Chief Heller is a senior instructor with the Mercer County Fire Academy. He instructs and has been a presenter at several national, regional, local training events throughout the United States and abroad. He has been published in Fire Engineering Magazine, Fire and Rescue Magazine, the FDTN, the Fire Department Training Network, and several local publications. He is a former co-host of Fire Engineering's Hump Day Hangout on training. Aaron is a founding member of the Fools Chapter in New Jersey. He holds a bachelor's degree in science and fire engineering for Columbia Southern, and he is the owner of On Scene Training Associates. So on a personal note, I met Aaron a few years back in 2018 when I started to get the opportunity to be a regular host on the Fire Engineering Hump Day Hangout. I think initially our passion for training and educating our own initially bound us together. And since then, I've had a chance to teach with him, have deep, meaningful, impactful conversations, and really get to know him as a brother in the fire service. Now, before I give him the floor, there's three things that came to mind when thinking about Aaron Heller and the topic of training. So these are the three things that I think about. First off is the quote, "Surround yourself with great people." This phrase is often thrown around, but Aaron epitomizes these words. Having met and taught with many of the instructors that Aaron has surrounded himself with, I quickly realized that not only were these individuals phenomenal instructors in their own right, but they were just good people. I mean, they're the kind of people you want to introduce your family to. And I remember teaching paramedic school years ago. I taught paramedic school for about 8 years. And through the course of those 8 years, I started off with a group. And through time, some got let go. Some were just not meeting the criteria. Some were just, you know, it wasn't their gig. And through the course of time, we developed a good cadre of just amazing instructors, but it took time. So I think about that when I think about Aaron. The second thing is, I think about that very popular quote by Bill Carey, "All firefighting is local." And we've talked several, we talked a lot about what that looks like in terms of the training that to meet the needs of our people. And it really got me thinking about knowing your first do and tailoring your training to your first do. The way Aaron fights fire in New Jersey versus me in South Florida, it may be some of them, there's a lot of similarities, obviously, but we really have to know our first do. All firefighting is local. So for me in South Florida, I better know how to fight a boat fire. I better know about hurricane glass and impact glass. I better know about hurricane rated overhead doors. So that also got me thinking about our conversation. The third thing was a quote. We came together in training, but we left as a family. Now, though I've never had the opportunity to meet EJ Mascaro, I've heard so many stories about him from Aaron, from Paul Combs, and others who have known him. And I have a feeling that I would have really liked him. EJ passed away some years ago and was one of those instructors that meant a lot to a lot of people. But that quote he's quoted to have said, "We came together in training, but we left as a family." That's a powerful statement, and it's something I would like to unpack today with Aaron here. So that all being said, Aaron, welcome to the show. Thank you for being here, man.
Well, thank you for having me. It's I've been looking forward to this since you invited me. It's a really cool opportunity, and it's something different, you know, and the fact that you're doing this on leadership and fire engineering soft fit, which is just fantastic that they've opened up another platform and giving you this opportunity. So really, thank you for having me. It's going to be really fun.
Yeah, man. Listen, I'm taking it seriously. I really feel the weight of this, but it's been good so far, and it feels right. So anyway, let's dive right into this, man. So today, the focus is on training. Now, not the content per se, but what training is beyond the information or the passing on of material. So let's start here. What is it to train our own? Go into that. What is it to train our own?
It's different than other things. So if I'm training my own in my own fire department, right, it's far more complex than if I'm teaching at a conference. I look at it as it's all about the personal relationships, right? So if I'm training with my department, I know a lot of the guys' personalities. I know a lot of the guys' traits, and for the most part, a lot of their strengths and weaknesses. So that helps me a lot. Sometimes it can hinder you a little bit too, because sometimes you'll say, "Well, he really does know that. I've seen him do it at fires, or I've seen him do it in training before." And sometimes you slack off, and you don't get that full training detail in that you need to. Whereas when we go to a conference, for the most part, it's new people that we're training, right? It's people we probably haven't met. We haven't made relationships with them yet. We haven't kind of dug deep into what each other are into as far as the fire service goes. And we have to keep it a little more, I'd say a little more vanilla, a little more wide open. And I just find that when you're training your people, you want to be steady, right? You don't want to be all over the map. You want to be dialed in for them. And in the end, the training that you're giving them is going to make a huge impact if you're doing it properly. And that's something that we talk about, you know, training our own, doing it for our people. It's all about how impactful we're going to be down the road, whether it's as we're doing the training, whether it's on a run, you know, a half hour later, whether it's on a run 3 years later. Was the training worthwhile? Was it impactful? Did it leave a lasting impression? And what is it useful? And I think that's where a whole lot of, you know, we can unpack each one of those things, so to speak. But to me, that's it. It starts with having a very steady training philosophy. And knowing what you need to do, knowing the requirements. And I'm not talking about, you know, IFSTA or, you know, NFPA requirements. I'm talking about, as you said, local requirements. What do we need from our people? And what do we need to provide them to give them every bit of training to accomplish the mission, to be better for those we serve and those we serve with? So that, I know it's a lot at one shot, but I'll take a breath.
That's a great start, man, because you mentioned a few things in there in terms of knowing our own people. And I think that one of the key words you said there was relationships. And that's a powerful word, because when we think about all of the way we grow through a career with the people we work with, a lot of the things we remember are tied into a scene, an incident, or, you know, in some cases, a lot of training. You triggered a nerve here when you said relationships. I remember, and not to go off tangent, but I remember years ago when I was at my firehouse at 46, we had one of our members who was going through a really nasty divorce. And you can look at it one of both ways, or one of two ways. You know, one, should he have called in sick and just spent time at home and this and that? We thought the other direction. We thought we wanted him to come to work. We were going to take care of him. We wanted him there for those 24 hours, because we didn't know what he was going to do on his off days, but when he was with us, we could take care of him. And I remember him coming to me when he was first going through the divorce saying, you know, I'm so angry. I'm so frustrated. I'm like, no problem. I got a bunch of acquired structures. So let's tie in some training into this. And that training we were able to do, and that multiple acquired structures and all the forceful entry, all that went into it. It went beyond training. It was a way for him to get through that grieving process. It was a way for him to cope during that traumatic time in his life. So it's a great example of a relationship being built and fostered and just worked on as he was going through that. So you really hit it when you said relationships as part of what training can be. And I think you also had impact. Yeah, I mean, if we think back to the impact, many of the people that have trained us when we first started, we remember them. We remember whether it's a skill, whether it's something, or just the way they made us feel. So I think you hit this started off in the right area. So in terms of, you know, perspective, from your perspective, in terms of leadership traits, so I want to talk about what can be modeled in terms of leadership traits before, during, and after training. In other words, as an example, back from my days when I was training at 46, and that was my firehouse before I went to DAZE, I made it very clear that from day one when we got together, I said, guys, here's what we're going to do. Every day, we are going to train. Every shift, we will train. And after they kind of got that look out of their eyes, like, oh my gosh, does he know what station we're at? We're really going to train every day? Yes, but we did. Whether it was a 5-minute drill on a piece of equipment or a full day in gear on an acquired structure, we're doing something. But that being said, going forward through those few years, it was a matter of things like trust. In other words, I told them this is what we were going to do, and I followed through, and it helped develop trust. I said something, and I was accountable for it. So there was little things that led to building of a relationship and practicing, the ability to practice and model those traits of leadership through training. So from your perspective, in terms of before, during, and after any type of training, what are your perspective on what kind of leadership traits can be modeled?
Well, I think the first thing from any instructor, number one, they have to know their audience, right? And again, whether we're training in our own firehouses, our own academies, or on the road somewhere, the biggest trait that I look for in somebody is I want them to be humble. I want humility in my instructor, and I want to be humble. And it doesn't always happen. I can tell you there's days where, you know, a little cocky sneaks in and you better smack yourself back down a peg. But I think humility is a really important trait. I think that the other trait that this goes for everything in the fire service, this goes through everything in life. It's kind of my mantra is if it's worth doing, it's worth doing passionately. And if you don't have passion for something, and you're somewhat checked out, those that you're supposed to be training with, those that you're doing anything with in life or in the fire service, are going to see that. If all we're doing is checking the boxes, you're not inspiring anybody. You're not making the impact, and everybody sees through it. So having passion for what you're doing is so important. It's why I hate when guys will get forced into a training division just for the hell of it because, well, we wanted them off the line, or they wanted to go to straight days, or whatever the case may be. And you see this all over the country, right? And a guy goes, yeah, I got shoved into training. But I want somebody who is passionate about training, who's like, I want to go to training. I want to make our fire department better. I probably don't want to be there the rest of my career because I want to get back on a rig and make another impact there. But while I'm here, I'm going to make us pretty badass. We're going to be better than we were when I got here. And I want to be impactful. So those you know, those kind of things, that kind of thinking to me are really important. But the humility is a huge trait, because a guy who's super cocky, a guy who's over the top arrogant, you're already sold. Like, you know, you've already sold out. People are not going to follow you, and they're going to start checking out when you're trying to train them. So humility is important.
You know, you're saying that, and I wanted to, humility is huge. Knowing your audience, that's 101 right there. Knowing who you speak to. I mean, the way you speak to a group of rookie cadets or rookie firefighters is way different than you speak to the 30-year veterans. And knowing your audience is massively important. It reminded me of a couple things, especially the passionate part. I think that just talking right now back and forth, obviously we got that passion. That's one of the things that drove us together. But I can remember just several examples of like just those instructors or educators or whatever it looks like walking into a class, let's say, and just, you know, that classic example of somebody walking in going, oh, all right, guys, well, we have to be here. Let's just knock it out. Really? You've committed a sin. You've, by doing that, you've committed a training bureau or educator sin by doing that.
Yeah.
I mean, and it could be anything. You could turn that around so easily. Like, I remember when I used to teach ACLS class, you know, medical class, I'd walk in and go, hey, everybody, it's great to see you. Today's going to be a great day. We got all these medical skills we're going to cover. We got all these calls you guys have been involved with. I really want to hear about that code you ran last week, that trauma alert you ran the other week before. Hey, Bob, I heard you did a crank last week. Please show that today in the class. This is going to be a great day. Let's get started. I mean, how different of that is the, crap, let's just do this.
Yeah.
So just starting off right, you know, with that passion, with that drive, taking ownership and not only taking ownership, but demonstrating ownership is massive. So there's, you mentioned a bunch of things and a bunch of traits that can be demonstrated during that. So I wrote a bunch of this down. And by the way, I'm writing this down in cursive. There's a reason why, because Nick Papa, I was watching intake notes one day in cursive, and I was asking him, like, why are you writing in cursive, man? And for whatever reason, it just stuck with me. So thanks, Nick. Thanks a lot, Nick, for making me write in cursive. I appreciate it. So my notes are taking a little bit longer to write. So anyway, going back to so the traits and stuff, I think we can actually revisit that because there's a lot more to unpack there. But let me ask you another question. From your perspective, what makes the best instructor or educator or trainer or teacher? What makes the best one?
I think it goes with the traits. I think it's not one and the same question, but it's damn close. So again, the passion is just, you know, it just jumps off the pages at me. They have to be knowledgeable, right? So how many times have you taken a class with somebody and you read right through them that it was bullshit? They didn't know what they were talking about. They had read some slides maybe here or there, and they weren't a master of that craft. And yet they were the one picked to teach that class that day, right? They have to be knowledgeable and they have to be experienced, and one comes with the other. You know, without experience, you may know what the book says, but a good example, you do garage door work all the time. You teach it all over the place with rotary saws. Mm-hmm. So I can read the book on rotary saw work, right? I can read all the little things that go with it, but I won't know the nuances of that work without having done it at fires and done it in the drill ground a lot. Right.
Right.
It's like we have extrication instructors out there, and I'm not throwing shade at any one guy, but I'll watch and I'll see guys and I pay pretty close attention because I'm in that business of training company, and I'll watch guys and I'll read their resume. And I read a guy's resume one day and I went, how old is this guy? Holy shit. He must have lived on the highway in a rescue truck and in junkyards. And I literally did the math because I was just like, I'm like, no friggin' way. There's just no way. And I did the math. He would have had to have spent like 300 days a year and like 5 hours a day in the junkyard just cutting up wrecks to come up with the bullshit stories that he came out with and the numbers that he was talking about. My guess was he's a pretty knowledgeable dude, but the bottom line was he fluffed everything he was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as a student, you're going to see through that, right? Because you didn't make those jobs on the highway. You know, I work in a fire department that, I don't know, we do a lot of fires there. I mean, not as many as some places. and certainly more than others. But I work a 24/72. So if I try to portray myself as a guy who catches jobs every day or every shift, and you know, my job goes to 100 jobs a year, working fires a year, and we're a small department, we're 8 companies. But you're going to tell me that, oh yeah, I can't act like I made those 100 jobs because I worked at 24/72. My chances are I made 25% of those jobs, you know? So knowledge and experience go hand in hand. You don't teach things you don't know about. That's something else. Enthusiasm would be another major thing that makes a good instructor. Like you said, the guy who walks in and goes, fellas, we're going to get through this one together, right? We got to get this drill done because the admin chief told me we got to do, you know, this training. Mm-hmm. As opposed to the person who walks in the door and goes, we're going to knock this out. This is going to be badass. We're going to include some of your ideas, some of my ideas. We're going to learn from each other. That's what it's all about, right? So that's a big deal. The humility, again, if they're super egotistical, if they're super arrogant about it, if they're talking down to their students or the attendees at the training, the minute I talk down to you, you shut me off, right? You're like, I'm done with this dick. I'm not going to listen to this guy anymore. Even if he's smart and he's been to 1,000 fires, he treats me like shit, I'm out. So that's really tough. And I've had those instructors, and I've seen those instructors in fire departments, and it's immediate turnoff. Nobody wants that, you know? And in today's world, you're going to get turned off even faster. Right. They have to be people who are respected and earned respect, not just given. So, you know, we that's a whole nother debate for a whole nother podcast somewhere else, I'm sure. But if it's somebody who is known as a mutt in the job, and that mutt now is going to try and show you how wonderful they are teaching you something, again, nobody's going to follow. So they're not leaders. They're not where they need to be. They're not leading in the training. So it's earned respect, obviously. I think that being open-minded is a huge asset to an instructor, to any officer, any leader, anybody in that position. But we don't know it all. You know, even if we're fairly good at something, there's still lots to learn, right? I've served in a special ops part of our department for, I don't know how many years, a long time, since its inception, whenever that was. So I know it, but I'm the last guy that should be teaching you ropes and systems, right? I know how to do them, but I shouldn't be teaching them. They're not my wheelhouse. I've ridden an engine/squad my whole career for the most part, right? All my truck work was in the volunteers or when we went mutual aid and ended up getting assigned truck work. So I lay back on the truck stuff. I don't take the lead. I know it. I can do it. But it's not my wheelhouse. So I can learn a lot from the students that are in that know more about it than I do. So being open-minded and understanding our limits as instructors, I think that's a big deal. The other thing is, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I wanted to just, before you go any further, I wanted to just tangent off something. I think you hit a nail there. Now, knowing your role, knowing what you're good at, you mentioned me with overhead doors. Yeah, that's one of my favorite things. I don't know what it is. Some people like fishing. Some people like hunting. I like chopping up overhead doors with saws. I have no idea why. It's just my favorite thing to do in the world. Anyway, I also know what I'm not good at or what I just don't do every day. So something you just said about the humility, I think there's opportunity. So this is in terms of the tactics of this podcast, in terms of the walkaways, I think you're hitting on some nerves right here. For example, when I'm presented, hey, Steve, can you teach a class on forcible entry? Well, I could, but I'm not that guy anymore. I've been an admin for a little bit. You know, I think that there's other people out there that probably are more in the trenches, more hands on, more reps. And, you know, they're probably better at it than I am these days. Now, so the opportunity, one, knowing my own, like, listen, you know what? No, I think that there's other people out there. I appreciate you asking, but I know my role. I think there's better people out there. So trying to remember the humility with that. But the second part of that is, but hey, I know some folk that really could help you out here. I know this guy or this girl, whoever, that are really good. Look into them. That's empowerment. So not only is that, are those people given the opportunity to be humble and say, no, I'm not there anymore, but let me give you an example of somebody that is, you have the chance now to bring somebody else up. So there's a lot of power there. So I'm sorry, I interrupted you midstream. So
no, it's awesome. If you don't interrupt me, I'll babble on forever. So it's good. But sometimes I need to be reined in. But the other thing, the other great trait about somebody that I look for that makes them a good instructor, obviously knowledgeable, obviously they understand, they have to understand what's going on in the field, right? So a guy who's been in admin for 10 years should not be telling a captain on an engine how to set up the engine hose bed for the stretches. And it happens. I know I'm probably pissing in somebody's Oreos right now, but I don't care. I was lucky to work for a chief for a long time who would give us the opportunity to try things out, right? Good example, our engines, he was a military guy. We had AAAs, right? AAAs on our pre-connects. And we were mostly a pre-connect company at the time. I hated the AAA, right? It was a pain in the ass. It didn't always work for what we needed. And some of our guys on the company were like, man, we need to try something different. Can we go to a flat lay or even a Minuteman or something? And we brought it to him. And he was a little hesitant in the beginning because that was a little out of the wheelhouse. And I said to him, finally, I said, Chief, just let us try it. What's it going to hurt? You're not going to be the one stretching the line anyway. And if we screw it up, you can let us know, you know, but give us the chance because we're the ones in the street. And he did. And you know what? He said, yeah, 90-day trial period. So it's never ended. So that was probably 15 years ago. But, you know, that's the kind of thing to understand what your people are doing makes you a better instructor, I think. And being a student, you know, it's that old adage, the day you stop learning in this business, you should really put in your retirement papers. And we know guys who are retired who are still studying and learning just because they want to stay on top of it, you know? So to me, you're always a student of the game, whether you're a probie or you've got 35 years on the job. I mean, you had Bill Gustin on your last one, right? There's nobody like I'm a little taken back that I get to follow Bill Gustin, but there's a guy with 40 some years in the job and no slowing down and staying completely current. And as you said, what's he do? Every class, he sits damn near in the front row and he's taking notes. And I mean, that's the kind of person that I want teaching me and I want teaching my firefighters. And as an instructor myself, I should be modeling my behavior after.
Yep.
And that's, you know, finding those, you know, Mike Champos and Mike Dugans and McCormick's and, you know, all these guys who are still bringing forth such quality messages, and whether it be tactically, whether it be leadership classes, whatever it is, they're staying current and they're not kids, but they're always learning and getting better at their trade. And to me, that I look at an instructor like that and I see that guy's on the docket. I'm going to his class because I want to learn from them, you know?
Yeah. I think that the statement of modeling behavior is something that gets thrown around a lot, but I constantly, that's on my mind constantly. In other words, if I'm going to teach a class on something, if I'm going to present something, if I'm going to have a conversation about something and be serious about it, am I modeling the right behaviors? Am I modeling good communication? Am I modeling the way that, am I showing them what I think that should be done? Like in terms of everywhere from how to communicate in an email or to how to perform on scene or how to talk professionally to somebody. Modeling behavior is a huge, huge concept. So I'm glad you went there. So let's go a little bit deeper into tacticals. So right now I've seen an abundance of local training events popping up everywhere and it's wonderful to see. I mean, mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm from South Florida. And it's so nice because everywhere you look, there's events everywhere, whether it be put on by the Fools, whether they're more established conferences, whatever. And there's the larger conferences that we're all familiar with, FDIC being one of them. So in terms of those, what are your thoughts on the advantages of both sides? Like the attending the local ones and the larger ones, what are some of the good of both?
It's a great question. And I think it's something that's been being debated now in today's state of economy and everything that's going on in the country and post-pandemic, I think it's a really important topic. So I'll start out with this. The big conference, the granddaddy of them all, right? FDIC. Biggest, baddest, and really what most people have judged themselves on over the years, or a lot of people have. I think that it holds tremendous value because it gets you out of your local bubble. Even if it gets you out of your state bubble, it gets you out of that mindset of this is how we do it in our area. You can go to FDIC. You can take 20 some hot classes. You know, not obviously you can't take all 20, but you can sign up for one of or two or four of 20 some hot classes. You have literally hundreds of classroom presentations out there. So you've got that menu that you can scroll down and pick from. Go see that person in person and get a whole nother idea of how it's being done somewhere else. And maybe it doesn't work where you are, but maybe pieces of it do. And getting out of that small mindset, that little community mindset, to getting into this bigger community mindset, I think that's where the big conference is such a plus. And I know FDIC can be pricey for people. I know that it's tough because our budgets are limited. I've been blessed. I've been going to FDIC since, I think, 1997. Literally, some of my best friends in this world I made at FDIC. My career would not be nearly what it is today had I not gone there and been able to interact with these folks, you know. And I'm not going to name drop them, but, man, I've been blessed to sit at dinner tables with the best of the best. And when you're smart enough to shut up and listen, my God, what an education you can get. You know, even in the old days of sitting in Ike and Jonesy's in the corner by the pinball machines and listening to some of these legends talk fire, you can't get that usually at some of the small local conferences, right? So that's where that holds tremendous value to me. However, we can't send a whole fire department to FDIC, but can I send 6, 8, maybe 10 guys to a fool's training in, you know, Bath, Maine? Or can I send them down to, you know, something down in Florida? You know, yeah, because budget-wise, it probably works a little bit better. Mm-hmm. I think you have to look at the conferences, look at who's teaching, vet out everything about it. Some of them are really, really good. There's some great stuff going on regionally now. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of us learned how to run the shows from, you know, Chief Halton, from, you know, Harvey Eisner when he was running things at Firehouse. I remember sitting and talking to him about all the different stuff and learning a ton. So some of these conferences, the regional stuff is just fantastic. And it does pertain to what you do in, you know, if you're taking a class in Kansas and they're going to talk directly about what's needed based on your building construction, based on your highways, your apparatus designs, well, then, hell, that makes a lot of sense. You should be there. And again, if some people can't get away for a week to travel to Indy, but they can travel one state over and catch a weekend class at a conference. So I think that's where that is. I really do. I go to both myself still. I teach at both myself still. I'm very, very blessed to be able to do that. And like I said, the best people in the world that I've ever met, my dearest friends, you know, people who I would totally entrust my life and all my secrets to, I met at fire conferences or on the job. So,
but, you know, it's there's a dichotomy there, right? In other words, large versus small and local. Like I love, you know, going to the larger conferences, FDSC being one of them. And I think that when I first went there the first time several years back, I did it wrong. And what I mean by that is I attended the classes and that was kind of it. I didn't see the whole picture of what was FDIC or those larger conferences. In other words, yeah. What are they doing after the show? Where are they meeting up? And those priceless conversations I learned to have afterwards. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, I mean,
social aspect of that is unbelievable.
Yeah,
it's been irreplaceable in my career, honest to God.
Yeah, And it's funny because I remember doing it wrong the first time. And then when I started going later on, I'm like, oh, it's not just the classes. It's everything. It's the interaction. It's the relationships. It's the after parties. It's the bars. It's the coffee shops meeting people. It's hey, can I get your contact information to call you later? And everybody I've ever done that to has said no problem answering back, responding back, and offering information without a second thought of cost or price or whatever.
Yeah.
And now on the local side, I got to tell you, I love local conferences. I love it. Now, this is why I love it. I love it because, like we talked about before, in terms of knowing your own territory, in terms of knowing your first due. All firefighting is local, right? Knowing your first due. I love that it's in-house. And I love that you're going to see your usual suspects. You know, you're going to see the people you know are going to be there. But that's where it starts. And I've been trying to preach this a long time now about, okay, we know who our people are. We know when we have a conference down here, whether it's the Fort Lauderdale Fire Expo or something down in Miami or a Fool's event, we know who we're going to see. Well, how do we get the plus ones? How do we get the other ones? We know who are the people that are right on that cusp. And maybe all they need is, hey, I'm going here. It's local. Why don't you come with me?
Yeah.
It's something as simple as that plus one mentality. So yeah, I'm on the same page. We both have massive value. Sometimes it's a cost issue. Sometimes it's you said it before. Some people can't take a week off, but if it's local, a day is easy. No hotels, little bit of travel. That's huge. And it's the people, you know, it's your local. So I'm glad you brought that up. There's a lot of,
let me just jump on that one more thing, 'cause it came to my mind. So I've taught it at two different local academies in my career, right? If all I did was attended classes at my local academy, I would have a very limited scope of knowledge. And it's nothing against my local academy. There are some fabulous instructors there who do a great job, right? However, it's not enough. It's simply not enough. I could be better by going to a class up in New England because I live in New Jersey, or going to a class, you know. When I was young, I was blessed to go to the University of Illinois, to the Fire Service Institute, and take an engine course. I didn't take the engine course. I took the Saving Our Own and Survival course.
Mm-hmm.
So my volunteer fire company actually footed the bill. Back then, that, you know, it was a couple $1,000s, and that was a huge amount of money. But I kept seeing these things from them going, I think this is really smart stuff, and this is way before we had Instagram or Facebook, and the internet was, honest to God, pretty new. I hate to admit it. But the fact that I got to go there and learn that stuff, and you know what I did? I brought it back. And as an instructor at my local academy, I integrated some of the things I learned there. Some of the things I learned at Fire Department Training Network from Jimmy McCormick's cadre.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I brought it home to us because some of their stuff would certainly be very valuable to us.
Yep.
And that's really the gist of it. You know, if all you do is take your local county academy classes and get your certificates and do that what you're supposed to do, you'll be okay. You're going to learn. You're going to be a good fireman if you put your mind to it, but you're not going to be as good as you can be. Mm. And that's where you got to expand the horizons. You just have to.
I like that last comment. You're not going to be as good as you can be. We can all level up. We can all jump up that. Yeah. Yeah. I'm trying to keep to the script here that I got here, but you know, we can probably do this the rest of the day. So I'm trying to make sure I'm focused on. But you're right. There's so many little nuggets that get dropped. And just like Chief Halton said about when he was talking a couple weeks ago about FDIC being a tactics conference, I want this podcast to be tactics. In other words, what can we learn from this and deploy once this is over? You know, what are they walking away with that value? All right. So let me ask you a question on the other side of the coin. Do you have any concerns in the fire service? Does anything keep you up at night? And this can be with training, but it should be. So let's kind of start with there. In other words, regarding perspectives, regarding training, do you have any concerns in the fire service, and what keeps you up at night in the area?
I do. And I can tell you shot me a couple of questions to say, hey, we're going to talk about a few of these things. And of course, we're going to go off script because that's what we do. But I rarely prepare for podcasts, which has gotten me in trouble. It definitely has. That question might have kept me up at night because it's such a good deep question. And how do you answer that, right? When there's a million things going on in the fire service. And so if I broke it into two things. I broke it into talking about instructors first, because fire service instruction has really been the crux of my career, other than going to fires and riding the rig for all those years. My passion has always been in training. My passion has been in what can we learn? How can I get better at this? And who can I learn from, right? One thing that I'm seeing, and again, I'm not naming names. I'm not throwing shade at any one person. And this is something that our younger firefighters and our more inexperienced firefighters, maybe it's not an age thing, it's an experience thing, have to understand. I believe that we have impressionable members who are being influenced via social media or whatever by folks with, you know, kind of ulterior motives, or simply who are just out there to build their brands and aren't out there necessary to build a better fire service, but they're building their brands. They're getting their clickbait online. You know, they're making some cute videos. They're knocking off stuff that, you know, we were learning from other guys 20 years ago, and now all of a sudden it's theirs and it's new. And I believe that a lot of the stuff, and I've seen this stuff, it's not good training. It's misleading. And for younger, inexperienced, impressionable firefighters, the ability to vet something out is very, very important. And I do fear that, you know, there'll be a guy on there talking about his knowledge base is engine. And he wants to talk all about how, you know, it's got to be a smoothbore line. It's got to be a, you know, 15/16 or a 7/8, and the hose should be packed this way, and this is how it works. And you'll see these guys out there. And that really works great in your town, you know, and maybe it really works great for you, and it might work great for me, but some of these kids don't take it that way. And some of our instructors that are doing this may not understand the power and reach they have and the influence that they may have on those they're speaking to.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's an old guy talking or if that's just my perspective is off, but that is something that bugs the hell out of me. And it does worry me. I've got a 23-year-old son that's on the job, right? I want him to be influenced by the best, the brightest, and the guys who are not only knowledgeable, but know their limits and know what they should be teaching. And, you know, I'll give you a good example of this. How many guys, and I'm not looking for a real answer, but how many guys jumped right on when slicers came out, right? So slicers comes out, and for those who don't know it, you can look it up. It came out when some of the studies were just really coming out, right? Guys jumped on it. Guys were making bank teaching it all over the country. And then we start getting more data. We start getting more from the interior stream study, from the commercial fire study, now from the basement fire study, and all of these things from UL and stuff that, you know, that Dennis Laguerre is putting out and that Ray McCormick's putting out, right? Mm-hmm. And now we realize that, you know, Ray wasn't joking when he said dicers and came up with a whole different acronym to counteract that. Mm. But the bottom line to me was they had already put it out. There were posters all over firehouse walls. I was walking into firehouses and I was talking to chiefs who were telling me, yeah, everything's going to be a transitional attack now. We saw what's going on and we can't take that chance. We're going to hit it in the window. Mm-hmm. Okay, chief, that may work on some fires. It's necessary on some fires. Totally get it. Manpower, water supply, building construction. Obviously, we're going to play into all this. But damn, that can't be a blanket, right? That's not a blanket policy. Mm-hmm. And now what do we have? Now we have deeper studies here. I don't know, 4, 5, 6 years later, stuff with that Brian Brush is doing with the rescue survey, things of this nature that are giving us really, really good data, really, really good hard facts, right? Yet some a lot of guys jumped at that first little squeaky wheel, so to speak.
Gotcha.
And that bugs the hell out of me. And it does concern me because I don't want to see the fire departments and the service led down the wrong path. Especially those who are impressionable, who aren't necessarily able to think on their own based on their own experiences. Right. So you and I, we've been in a fire service a long time. I probably got you beat by a few years. You know, Captain Gustin's got me beat by a few years, but we've seen a lot of stuff, right? We've seen things come and go. We have a really good base of our experience and what we know. My kid at 23 doesn't have that. Those he's being influenced by, I want to have a good understanding, a clear open-mindedness to what's going on, and not have ulterior motives or agendas at all. And that's that. It's just a pet peeve that definitely bugs the hell out of me, and something that it does keep me up at night in a way that just vet what's being sped out there, you know, because with social media, things are fast, man. Things are coming at you a million miles an hour. And you know how guys are in a firehouse now. They're on their phone more than they ever should be. And, you know, that's why a lot of firehouses have baskets on the kitchen table. You put your phone in the basket. So at least when we're having a meal, we're not all on our phones. And I'm guilty of it too. So that's something that really does kind of, it concerns me. It does. And so you want me to jump to point two, or you want to?
Yeah. No, I guess because I can dive into that, but I want you to go to point two. Yes.
Okay. So my other thing that does concern me, and this is something that we all know the fire service has been very proactive and not always very reactive and not always proactive. Although I think we're getting better at that. Again, knowledge is power, and I think we're more knowledgeable, and there's more data and more info out there for us to gain, which again makes us a better instructor, a better fire service. So one of the things, I think the complexity of the job concerns me. You know, years ago we delved into EMS, we delved into hazmat, we got into technical rescue. So we've done all this stuff, but now the complexities of each one of those things is going up exponentially. You know, that really is a concern. You know, I think we're seeing way more difficult hazards. So lithium ion fires, right? Mm. That's the buzz right now. And that ain't going away. That's only going to get worse. FDNY is doing a symposium on it next week. That's how impactful this is becoming to the fire service. And if it hasn't happened in your community yet, it will. That's not an if, that's a when. The other thing is that I'm seeing is obviously electric vehicle fires and rescue, right? You know, guys are coming up with all these wild ideas of how we're going to put out a Chevy Volt or a Tesla or you know, whatever vehicle that's out there today. And there's tons of misinformation that's going to get somebody killed. All of a sudden, a guy takes a class. He's a freaking expert on it. Now he's going to go teach it, right? Like, again, I'm blessed. I get to work with Carl Haddon. Carl teaches it. Carl's done research around the world. He's traveled around the world, been in the plants where they're making these things, where they're making the batteries, where, you know, so I'm really, really thrilled that I get that firsthand knowledge from him. He's teaching me the right way. But then I'll see, you know, some guy who saw a class online or saw something, and now all of a sudden he's teaching it. And it's like, man, the wrong information will get you killed. You know, a couple bad lungs full of this crap and we're in big trouble, right? You know, so that's a big concern. And the other one that I don't know if it concerns others, but it's certainly something I'm starting to see with the construction boom that we went through over the last few years. We have seen a ton of building renovation work in our area, and you know, some of it's being done really well, some of it I'm sure the code enforcement folks are right on top of it, and others, it's happening so fast that those guys can't even keep up with it. I got a feeling that down the road, we are going to see fires in some major league altered buildings that nobody knew anything about. And it's going to create problems for us. And the other problem I see is the vacants and abandons, and however you want to call in a vacant or abandoned. I'm actually writing an article about it on the commercial side of things. we're going to see more and more of those with the economy the way it's going. If things continue and, you know, you see layoffs, you see buildings, you see people going out of work and businesses shutting down, that is a serious problem for us. I mean, it won't be a war years problem, I don't predict, like they had, you know, in the 70s and early 80s when everything was in the shitter. But it's something that we better stay on top of now, because playing catch up to that and getting educated to that later, we could be very reactive to bad fires because of that. So those are two of my really big bullet points. I know I rambled, but
this is good because I'm just going to hone in on one area. You mentioned the importance to vet your material. God, that is so crucial. That is so critical. The instructor that vets the material, does the research, has the experience, but then pairs that with the references, the citing, the backing of it all up. That just shows respect to the people they're teaching. So then when they're asking the question, they have it, the answers. And if they don't, they'll find it, but it shows it's a sign of respect. Like, hey, I did all I could to learn everything I could about this topic, whatever it is. Here's what I got.
And they cite their sources. They don't call it their own. Yeah.
Yes, they give credit where credit's due. 100%.
I told you I'm not a true truckie, right? I do enjoy truck work. I love doing the stuff. And I've learned a tremendous amount. But for me to say I came up with, you know, this is the way I beam raise a ladder, or this is the way I start a rotary saw, I probably learned that from a guy like Dave Gallagher, you know, at FDIC in 1997. Or maybe I learned it from Champo, or, you know, there's little known guys now who were freaking legends when I was going to those classes in the late 90s, early 2000s, right? Mm-hmm. Forcible entry. I learned forcible entry from a guy named Greg Einsfeld. Greg was a fireman on Rescue 3 in New York, right? I bet you that the majority of our listenership, viewership, whatever today, they don't know Greg from anybody, right? But this guy was a legendary Rescue 3 fireman who just knew the job inside and out, taught it to me. So if I'm teaching forcible entry to this day, 25 years later, 30 years later, whatever it is, I'm going to say, yeah, Greg showed me this tip. He was this rock star at Rescue 3 back in the 90s and early 2000s. And that's very important. And it's very important, I think, to the students, because what did we talk about earlier? We're setting an expectation of behavior. And you know what? When that student becomes the instructor 10 years from now, 5 years from now, or they just go back to their firehouse to conduct drill, maybe they'll say, hey, you know what? I learned it from Mike Champo, or I learned it from Aaron Heller or Steve Shaw. And that guy showed me this, but he told me he learned it from this dude in New York City years ago. You know, we stand on the backs of legends, man. And for those of us to think that, you know, I am that guy, you're just bullshitting yourself in the public, you know? So that's where that humility, that's where that, it all comes into one big thing. And none of us are the perfect instructor, the perfect person. Obviously, we all have plenty of work to do, but that's where I think it just makes us better. It makes the job and the fire service so much better.
So I think that the next question I was going to ask has just been answered. I was going to speak about what the listeners here need to hear about the impact they have as influencers in the fire service. And I think you spoke to that. I mean, as I said in the beginning, I truly believe there is a convergence between leadership, influence, and training. Yeah. And you have to be cognizant of that as educators. Now, that whether you're in the training bureau, whether you're on shift training, no matter what that looks like, you have this massive, like you use the word influence, you have this massive responsibility, you have this impact, this bandwidth, this platform, whatever you want to call it. You have to be cognizant of that what you say is, your words have weight and your actions are powerful. So I think that you reflected that on multiple levels. So that the word influence, and then most importantly, I'm so glad you said it, because I did not say it, giving credit where due. Oh my goodness. Thank God you said that. That's so crucial.
That sticks in so many instructors' crawl, man. It really does.
Yeah. And the thing about it is, and again, going back to modeling behavior, the more we do it, the more we give credit to those who we learned it from, that should inspire the others to do the same thing, because we're modeling that behavior.
Yeah.
So,
well, let me just go to that for a second, because I did write some notes on that, you know, speak to the listeners about, you know, that as we've said, we cannot say this enough with enough power. Your voice is really powerful. If you're out there and you're putting out material, you're putting out educational content, whether it be online, whether it be through social media, on Instagram posts, or, you know, whatever, you got to understand there's responsibility comes with that, man. Your voice is powerful. And the minute you have 1,000 followers and 10,000 followers, and some of these guys have 20, 30, 40,000 followers, what you say or how you say it damn well could change someone's life or their career, both positively or negatively. So you've got to understand that when you're doing that. We've had this conversation. I don't know how many guys, I'm sure a lot of people know, Jeremy Donch from National Fire Radio, right? Mm-hmm. They are an amazing platform, fantastic guys. And Jeremy has pointed this out so much that for years, we got all our knowledge base from local instructors, Fire Engineering Magazine, Firehouse Magazine, you know, that sort of thing. And that was where we went for all of it. That was our influence. Mm-hmm. Now we've got thousands of influencers out there. And that's, you know, I never even knew that was a word until recently. But now we have thousands of influencers out there that if they know how to figure out how to do social media, which I'm still learning, they can send incredibly strong messages. But goddamn, make sure that you're sending them the right message, or you may get somebody killed. And the anecdote that I'll give you with that is, I know of an instructor out there. He is very bright. He is a very dynamic instructor. I think he's a good presenter. I see so many positives in this guy, and people flock to him, right? They have listened to him, and I think they've, you know, kind of followed him to the altar, so to speak. But there was a time where I saw some stuff he put out, and I went, man, that's great for where you're at, but that isn't good. If my guys follow that and they take that as gospel, they're going to get themselves in trouble in a three-story, 200-year-old colonial or Victorian house. Mm. And I said, man, he's putting this out as, and he didn't mean it negatively. He was just putting it out. Hey, this is how you do it. But this is how you do it there, not how you do it here. And I actually called him up and said, bro, you got to remember, man, you don't just have followers where you are now. You are a very powerful voice all over. Mm. So please remember that when you put out some of this content, that you preface it with that kind of thing. And he came back to me, and at first I think he was like, who the hell are you to say that to me? But then we had a really great conversation, and over the last few years we've talked a few times, and it was just a little bit of a wake up, you know, that damn, man, your voice is so powerful. And, you know, I'm not saying I'm jealous that you got a powerful voice, but please remember that what you say, it's no different than, you know, somebody trying to rile somebody else up, you know, in the firehouse or politically or in a union thing. You know, one voice starts infecting the other, the other, the other. And if it's not going the right way, you can create a bad chain. In our business, it could be something, it could be fatal. Or it could just turn a guy into an asshole and screw up his career, and he wouldn't even realize it until it's too late. You know, well,
you know, heavenly. And you know what? It's wonderful that you reached out to him. You know, I think that speaks volumes. Having maybe integrity is not the right word, but having the cojones or the backbone to go, let me just reach out to this cat, and then having the conversation. Because even though the conversations go a variety of different ways, you're initiating the conversation. You're starting that conversation. You've reached out because you were concerned. And it's not because you wanted to make fun of them or berate them. You're concerned. And it started a dialogue. That's huge.
And he's a good dude, man. I mean, and listen, he's a very well-respected boss where he is. And I know he's doing great things in his fire department and in his region. It was just, I don't think that he understood the impact he was going to have. And you know, as an old guy, maybe I kind of have a little responsibility to at least say what I see. Maybe I'm wrong and I was totally off base and he could tell me, no, you're full shit. But it was taken really well. And since then we've been very cordial to one another. And I think there's mutual respect, you know?
All right. Well, we're coming up around an hour somewhere. I guess I should probably keep track more closely here, but it's around an hour-ish, I suppose. But I do want to follow up on a couple of final questions here. You know, I'm enjoying doing this. I'm enjoying this conversation. And there's so many different ways this can go in terms of where we could focus on. But in terms of what you feel that firefighters today want to hear related to leadership, give me some ideas of what these future podcasts should look like. What ideas should be covered? What do you think?
I think that learning how the next generation of firefighters need to be led. You know, do they need Jocko leadership every day? You know, David Goggins leadership every day, or do they need some form in between every day? I think that's a really important topic, is how we're going to lead our folks, right? And how we're going to, again, model our behavior so that they're going to follow in the right footsteps and become the next leader. How are we setting ourselves up to, you know, I know you talked about legacy prior, and that's really important because they are going to have to decide what their legacy is going to be, right? I'm getting towards the end of my career. I understand that, you know, that's where it goes at some point, but I never thought about, oh, what's my legacy going to be, you know, and I still don't know what it is, but and although the tank ain't empty, just saying, I still got plenty left in it. Like if we had a fire tomorrow, I'd be very, very thrilled to be there. But the bottom line, I think we need to focus on how we're leading into the future, what the fire service has got to look like and how we can help mold it to get there. You know, I got to agree with something that Captain Gustin said on your last podcast. I believe the fire service is heading in the right direction. And I know there's so much bad stuff going on. And you can read the headlines of all the crap we have and all the negatives. But damn, nobody points out the positives enough. There's a lot of great firemen. Look at the guys who are going to all these conferences, learning, wanting to learn, that are into the job. And as long as it's more than a slogan, right? You know, I went last year, was my first year going to the Joey D conference up on Long Island. And that's 100% fundraiser. They don't take any money for themselves. All the money goes back into the charity and to people who need it and are going to use it right. Okay. And I saw like 300 and some students that weekend, just motivated badasses from around the country that wanted to get better. And who was walking around there? Chief D, a guy who lived the freaking war years, who was a Vietnam super, you know, this guy won't tell you about the medals on his chest, but this is the kind of hero that led us. And here's all these younger dudes and guys my age learning, right? Yep. Chief John Cagno from up near Providence, Rhode Island. Same thing, older salty chief who's leading the way and showing the guys what the next step. They're leading by example still. And mm-hmm. I think that leading by example is really, really going to be an important topic for you and how we do that. I have not always set the best example, right? I know that. But boy, I've looked at people who I should have followed closer. I should have listened better. And now my mom's favorite line is, you can't put, you know, an old head on young shoulders. And it's true. It's true, right? If we knew now what we knew then, what changes would we have made, you know, in our careers? I would have chosen a lot of the same path, but definitely taken different routes to stay on that path. Mm-hmm. You know, the long and winding road probably was a little too windy. So, but I think, does that answer it a little bit?
Yes, 100%. That's phenomenal. In fact, I guess from going forward, I know when the podcast is over, when my page is full, which is full of stuff, it's probably close to the end here. So, no, but yeah. You're 100%. And that there's so much conversation on generations and what works better for one and better for the other, and what works across the board. There's so much to unpack there. That's a good one. So we're kind of wrapping up here, and I guess I'm coming into the final thoughts area. But before you dive into your final thoughts, I do want to just recap that one statement that, you know, EJ was quoted saying so many years ago. And again, I never met him. I know you were very close. That idea of we came together in training, but we left as family. That's just a lot to unpack there. I don't want you to go into detail, and I don't want you to dive. You know, you do what you need to do here, but that's a powerful statement. And as we leave here, as we're going away, you said relationships from the beginning. There's opportunities to develop these relationships, and that phrase just spoke to me. So, but anyway, as we find out, what are your final thoughts, man?
Well, EJ is over my shoulder every day, right? I mean, he was a younger guy, much younger than me. He was a war hero. He truly was guy, you know, Bronze Star, multiple Purple Hearts in a very, very, very special unit, the hardest hit unit in Iraq, the hardest hit Army unit in Iraq. And he came home to talk about it, and he just was a fireman's fireman, right? And he just loved every bit of it. And when I met him, he was a pain in my ass the day I met him, and he never stopped asking questions. And I'm like, my God, this guy doesn't stop. And, you know, a week into knowing the guy, I was like, man, this guy he's the real deal. And I really like him. Mm-hmm. And he became truly a brother to me. I mean, truly a brother. And there were days where when he started working for On Scene, I had a night in Louisiana we were teaching, and he was driving me nuts. And I pulled him behind the barn that we were near where we were teaching. And I said, if you don't settle down, I'm putting your ass on an airplane tonight and sending you back to South Carolina because you're driving me insane. And this was a guy who was truly one of the guys I just absolutely loved. So in my office over my left shoulder is a portrait that Paul Combs did of EJ. And he's always going to be my family. And he's the one who said it first. He said, you know, we come to these places here to train, and we're coming together in training, and we're friends. But when we leave, we're all family. And man, it's true. And we're a dysfunctional family, and the fire service is definitely that. But who better to understand each other? Who better to take care of one another? Who better to train us? You know, when we go through these things, you know, I went through I can't say it was a terrible divorce. It wasn't nearly as bad as some people's, but I went through a pretty rough time in my life. And the guys who were there for me, who meant the most to me, other than my kids and my immediate family, was my fire guys and my on-scene training guys, my instructor family. And, mm-hmm. you know, they gave me the best advice, and, you know, that's our family. And that's what this job should always, it's like no other, man. You look around, and how many civilian friends do you truly have compared to how many fire department friends? Right. For me personally, I can count on one hand my civilian friends that I'm tight with. Right. And my fire friends that I'm tight with, it's a whole lot bigger circle. And, you know, I love them all, even when they're total screw ups like I've been in my life. But that was EJ's whole thing, man. We are here together. We are always going to do this for you. We're always going to be here for one another. Man, you need me tonight at 3 a.m. to give you a ride home. Call me. All right. Call me. And that was EJ's fatal mistake the night that he died. I talked to EJ that afternoon, that evening, and he ended up dying in a car crash, a horrendous car crash in North Charleston, where the brothers cut him out. And Jim Crawford called me at 3 a.m. and I said, God damn it. All he had to do was make a phone call to anybody. He had the same tight circle as me, you know? So never forget that circle of family, because it's everything, man. It really is everything.
That is a powerful way to wrap this up, man. And thank you for offering that. That's special. Thank you for those words, man. So I just want to recap, because I wrote a bunch of notes. I just want to recap some of the things we covered, because I think we accomplished the goal here in terms of this being tactics driven. In other words, things to walk away with. We talked about relationships, the fact that training goes beyond just the content and the material being covered. It transcends that in terms of relationships, in terms of your ability as a trainer or instructor or educator, regardless if you're in the training bureau or an officer or time on the job, in terms of empowerment, that mix that we talked about between humility and empowerment, the passion and the enthusiasm needed that people want to see when you're out there passing along knowledge and being that influencer. We talked about earn respect, open-mindedness. We talked about modeling behavior. We are on the spotlight. We are being watched. People are watching the words coming out of our mouth. They're watching our actions. They're watching to see if they match up. That's called integrity. They're watching that. So that modeling of behavior is huge. We talked about leadership, influence, training, and that convergence. And we talked about giving credit where credit's due. I think that was one of the biggest things. I'm so glad you brought that up, Aaron, in terms of your teaching things. Great. Vet it. Make sure you got the references. Make sure you're passing on good, solid information, because people trust us. We talked about trust in the fire service. People trust us. Well, you better be giving them the right information. And it starts a lot of times with those trainers, wherever they are in your job. And you're right. The last thing you said in terms of your voice being powerful, man, we do have a responsibility as instructors, as leaders, as educators. We have that responsibility. We have to be cognizant of it. I think that's where it starts, that cognizance, that awareness level of our role as educators, influencers, and as leaders through training. So listen, Aaron, this has been phenomenal. I can't thank you enough. So thank you for being here, my man. This has been great. Thank you for your knowledge. Thank you for your wisdom.
Oh, man. Thanks for having me. I wish you nothing but success on the podcast. You know, fire engineering is a fabulous platform, and they picked the right guy to do this. And, you know, Bobby Halton's no dummy. He picks some good people to do some good things. And I'm thrilled to have done it. And thank you. Thanks for giving me this opportunity.
Well, thank you, Aaron. And to everybody else out there, thank you for listening. I really mean that. Thank you. There's a lot of things you could be doing with your time. There's a lot of different podcasts and ways to spend your time. It is not gone to waste. It is appreciated. You are appreciated. And thank you for your time. Since the last episode, some people have dropped some nice comments, whether it was text or email or even on the Facebook Fire Engineering page. I got to tell you, that made my day when I saw those. So if you do have any comments or you do have any advice or thoughts, please drop them in there. They're wonderful to see. I'm glad that we're already providing value. It's a wonderful thing. So thank you all. We'll see you next month. If you need to get in touch with Aaron, you can go to OnScene. If you need to get in touch with me, you can do it through Fire Engineering. But thank you so much for listening. God bless, and be safe out there.